The DigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Center Show, Show 113, Thursday, 5th of July 2007. Show with Orb Networks. I'm Ian Dixon, and this week on the show, Xavier Lowett from Sony is going to be on talking about their fantastic XL3 media center system that was shown at CES this year, and it includes cable card support, Blu-ray, and is a really high-end media center system. We'll also be talking about their TP1 living room PC, which I don't know if you saw the pictures coming out of CES, is a sort of circular device, and again it's designed for the living room as not a traditional PC. We'll also be talking about how Sony fit Media Center into their digital living range with their range of products. I've got email to show and news items. Welcome to the show, good to have you along. I do appreciate you listening as ever. I'm going to go straight into email. Greetings Ian, although I've only been listening for a week, I've listened from episode 93 up to the most recent, and it's been very interesting and informative. I came across your podcast after your show received a mention on the HD Guys. I was most interested in episode 98 with Stephen Chung from Vidabox about the HD PC and the new high-def formats, as I have attached Xbox 360 HD drive to my PC and I'm running PowerDVD Ultra 7.3 with the latest build update to get my HD content into my home cinema. I hope soon to get the Pioneer DVD Blu-ray combo. But I was a little disappointed that he didn't cover the issue of HDMI 1.3 from a HD PC, which is required to get true HD and DTS HD audio signals of both Blu-ray and HD DVD in their unchanged format directly to a home theatre amp for decoding external to the PC. I currently have an ASUS EN7600GT with HDMI, but seriously doubt this is HDMI 1.3, although I can't find any information to confirm which HDMI it is. Do you know of any graphics cards, sound cards or motherboards that are HDMI 1.3 enabled? Looking forward to hearing information you can give, because I feel like I'm butting my head against a brick wall about this. Thanks, regards, Jason. Thanks for the email, Jason. I thought I'd read out the whole of the email, it's a long but I'll read it out because it's quite an interesting point. I spoke with Stephen Chung from Vidabox about it, and he said, "Hi Ian and Jason. As of the moment, Vidabox Media Centres do not have HDMI 1.3 option, but we are working with that option right now to allow the pass-through of 8-channel uncompressed PCM audio data streams via HDMI cable. But we are working on an option right now that will allow the pass-through of 8-channel uncompressed PCM audio stream via HDMI cable. It's not true HDMI 1.3 connection, but it will provide the DTS HD and Dolby HD that many people have been asking for. As of now, for those who want HD audio, we're having analog pre-out options as an intermediate solution. In reality though, most people's equipment can't take advantage of Dolby Digital HD and DTS HD. We've run a number of trade shows in concert with some very high-end speaker manufacturers. Unless someone has a 5-figure plus set of speakers like Martin Logan, having HD audio stream isn't helpful. Most speakers do not have the dynamic range necessary to fully exploit the sound information that's carried in the signal. Realistically speaking, it'll take a lot more than a simple $200 HDMI 1.3 card to achieve a great sound. You really need a great amp with enough juice and power for the entire setup, and a very high-end set of speakers. Setups like this usually cost $50k plus, and even then, the standard compressed SPDIF connections coming out of Vidabox is more than enough for most folks. In short, unless you have a very good high-end audio setup, you're unlikely to hear any difference between the standard SPDIF and uncompressed PCM. For high-end audience who has that type of equipment, we use an analog solution for their setups, or they can wait for the digital pass-through solution, which will be available in quarter two. Thanks, Stephen, for replying. It's interesting there, isn't it, that the connections of compressed, uncompressed, are the signal going through is only going to come out as good as the end product, which is your speakers and your receiver solution. So while you may go to a lot of expense to get the uncompressed signal through, it's not going to help, or it's not going to make a huge range of difference if you're in a normal, say, living room where you've got things in there that aren't optimal for the acoustics of the room. So it's a good compromise, really, isn't it, between all the various components. But thanks to Jason for the email, and really thanks to Stephen for replying and clearing that up. Now an email from Colm in Dublin. It says, "Hi, I have a HP Media Center PC, which I upgraded to Vista Ultima. Everything works fine on my setup, with the exception of a fairly consistent failure to go to sleep mode when I press the remote power button. But that's another story. My question is a very basic one. I do not want to connect 3 Media Center PCs together with an Xbox and a remote for my Marantz AV amp. What I really want to do is simply improve the picture quality of my TV. I have a 37-inch analog TV, great TV, but the PC and Internet Explorer images wasn't up to scratch due to the old problem of analog TVs not having the pixel cat, etc. I've since sold my analog TV, and the real problem will be when I get the new 42-inch LCD TV. I know the quality of the already degraded TV picture will be exacerbated by the electronically blown up image of a 42-inch, plus the necessity of plasma and LCD give a very high quality TV signal. So, should I look at the TV tuner card, get digital TV signal into my PC by paying NTL for the privilege of a set-top box that'll be forced to go digital anyway, and how will Media Center handle it? So upgrade my video card, or should I only use a DVI connection from NVIDIA to the TV, and do I really have to get a TV with a DVI connection, or can I use a DVI HDMI converter as a cable just as good? As you can see, probably the most common basic question for all the Media Center users, how can I get a good quality TV image on my big flat screen via a Media Center PC, as I could connect directly from my set-top box? I hope you can advise before I splurge my flat screen. Regards, Colm Baldwin from Dublin." Thanks for the email, Colm. I think the issue that you've got here, as you're talking about, is when you're going with your 42-inch, going direct from Media Center, are you going to get a great TV picture? And I think what you're worried about is the signal that's going up to the Media Center PC or up to the TV, the quality of it. Well, because the signal that goes into the Media Center PC, the TV, is the key factor here. The TV will display whatever Media Center puts out on that, and things like you mentioned, upgrading the NVIDIA card or using HDMI or HDMI, aren't going to make a huge amount of difference if you've got a poor quality TV signal going into the PC in the first place. And you mentioned about set-top boxes and NTL, and I think that's where the issue could be. For example, in my setup, I've got a DVB-T card, which is an over-air digital TV signal, so the quality is pretty good, actually, especially on the BBC and the mainstream channels. So there's no conversion going on, just the signal comes straight in through the Media Center PC, and then actually mine goes through an extender, but it could go directly to the TV, and that would be a good signal. But when you're using something like a set-top box from an NTL box or from Skybox, then you may be using analog capture to get that signal into the Media Center PC, and that's where you get some signal loss. And of course, if you're using an analog TV card in your Media Center PC, that's not going to be as good as a digital signal. So depending on what configuration you've got, it depends on how good the signal will be. I don't think you'd need to get a new graphics card or special cables or whatever. It just depends on what signal's coming into your PC. And of course, if it's a poor signal coming in, then that'll just be exacerbated by the large screen. So if you've got any more details on that, let me know. And if any listeners got any thoughts on the best way of connecting up the TVs, let me know. The usual address is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Now, a couple of news items. The interesting development on the Xbox 360 front, so we're just talking about cables there. Cable manufacturer XCM say they're going to be bringing out a HDMI cable for the Xbox 360 that'll be complete with the 1080p support. Which is going to be interesting to see, because one of the main selling points of the Xbox 360 Elite is that it's got a built-in HDMI connection. So it's going to be interesting to see how XCM can develop that cable so that you've got a direct HDMI connection coming out the back of it. Because I didn't think there was any sort of direct digital signal coming out the back of the Xbox, the original Xbox 360. It will mean that you've got one nice thin cable coming out the back of the Xbox into your TV, I know people have asked for it. Other than that, I can't see a huge advantage over the other signal cables like the VGA or the component cables. Over the last week, I noticed there was no guide data for ITV1 on my MIDI Center PC, and I wondered whether other users had this problem. At first, I thought it was something that was just a problem on my machine, so I went into MIDI Center, rescanned for the TV signals, did the setup again. I noticed there still was no guide data for ITV1, and I'm in the Granada area, which is northwest of England. Now, for any non-UK listeners, ITV is one of the main UK channels, and of course, a lot of programs that are scheduled to record are on there. So I was losing, potentially losing a lot of recordings, and as you know, that's not good for the WAF acceptance factor. So I did a trick that I'd used in the past a couple of years ago when they had guide data problems, was when you go through the setup and you put your postcode in, I put my postcode in as a London postcode, and when the scan was complete, it actually got the guide data back. So it looked like it was something specific to the region that I'm living in. And I posted it on the blog and on the green button as well, and there's looks like a few other people have been affected. I spoke to someone who's was also in the same UK region as me, had lost the ITV1 data, and another region, Anglia, as well. So it's not specific to one region. But it is a real critical area when one of the main channels has no guide data. It's really annoying that you could lose something, and it's something that's got to be addressed, because this is one of the key things of MIDI Center, having the guide data there. And while I was able to spot this and sort of do a workaround, had I not seen this, I could have missed a lot of recordings, and that would have been no good at all, and would not have been good for MIDI Center. And I believe that my thought guess it is not a Vista or an XP problem, it's an actual guide data problem that the guide data providers. So if anybody else has got any experience with this, let me know, and let me know if you've tried the workaround and got that working. And while we're talking about TV and digital TV, interesting comment on the forums on the digitallifestyle.com. Alex wrote, one thing he'd like to see improved in Vista is the zoom functions with live TV. There are four zoom functions in MIDI Center you can pick, so you can have widescreen and stretched and whatever. So this is where it fills the screen depending on the settings you give it, because some programs are in 4x3, some are 16x9. And Ildok replied on the forum. He said, I can't agree with you more. Even low-end TVs have this auto-zoom function for years. And I posted a question on the green button to see if it was possible to develop such a plugin, but it seems not to be possible to change the zoom mode from the API. So it's got me thinking, really, you know, he's right. I've seen TVs have that function years ago, where you can see them flick between the different modes as the broadcast is changed. And I think the DVB-T implementation is a little behind some of the TVs and set-top boxes out there. Things like subtitles and zoom modes and the tech support, that they're not built in. So hopefully we'll see an update to the DVB-T support through some of the work being done at the Microsoft European Development Centre in Ireland, and we talked about that on the previous show. So thanks for the posting in the forums. It's always a good place to hang out there. In case you didn't see, developers take note, Stephen Harding has taken charge of the developer forum on the digitallifestyle.com forums, and he's going to be discussing issue raised on his developer blog and sharing his ideas on Trivia Center and new MIDI Center applications development. So if you have any questions for Stephen, check out the developer forums and have a look at Stephen's welcome post. I think it'd be a great place for developers to hang out and talk about his blog and his applications that he's developing. And finally, I hope to be introducing a new feature on the show soon called Real World. And this segment will focus on real users and their opinions of MIDI Center. So the interviews are going to be short, and I have a standard list of questions. So it could be, how long have you been using MIDI Center? Describe your MIDI Center setup. What made you start using MIDI Center? What's the most important feature of MIDI Center? What bugs you most about MIDI Center? And what you'd like to see added to Media Center. Now, the interviews can be done by Skype or phone. I imagine about 5 to 10 minutes long. And basically, it's going to be a short interview just to discuss those features and just to get some real-world experiences of Media Center. So not just the great guests we've had from Microsoft and the OEMs and developers, but real people using these and I want to get your sort of thoughts and include them on various shows. So if you're interested in doing that, drop me an email, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com, and we'll arrange a time that we can work out time zones and that kind of thing. And show sponsor One Voice are going to be giving away a copy of Media Centre Communicator for taking part in the interviews. So we're going to be drawing one out at random in a few weeks' time. And actually, talking about One Voice, we're going to take a break now and a message from One Voice. But they've kind of allowed me to offer a trial version of Media Centre Communicator, version 3 for Vista, for download on the download section on thedigitallifestyle.com. It's a full-featured 30-day trial of the Media Centre Communicator, so you can try it, see how it works for you, and you'll find that in the download section and links in the show notes, and links for everything else in the show notes as well. Right, I'm going to take a break, and I'll be back with Xavier Lowert from Sony.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on One Voice's Media Center Communicator, MC Each Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. One Voice offers licenses for MCE Speech Tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
So welcome to the Media Center Show.
Thank you very much, Ian. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to actually participate in this. My name is Xavier Lowert. I'm a product manager, a marketing product manager, I should say, within the Sony Vaio PC category. And I'm specifically focused on what we call the digital home, encompassing products like the XL3 digital living system, but also other MC platforms like the TP1 or the LS all-in-one PC.
Sony's products for Media Center have been really interesting, and particularly around the XL range. And I first saw the XL range at CES a couple of years ago, and I really like that sort of style of PC. But I mean, Sony have got it's relatively recent, isn't it, commitment to Media Center? It's sort of the last 2 years, I would say.
Correct, indeed. We had our proprietary TV tuner solution, which was called GigaPocket, and we shipped it away in 2004, if I remember correctly, to the MC interface, where MC started gaining more awareness in the market, and we also perceived the value of transitioning from a proprietary solution to a more of a standard offering from Microsoft. And ever since then, as you know, MC penetration has grown exponentially, especially in the last year and a half. And we have followed suit with that penetration. We have it now across numerous notebook platforms, but also across single digital home product category that we have.
So what's Sony's vision then of the digital home? What, you know, what components does that make up?
Very interesting question. Digital home is a very loose term right now. Some people say that digital home is comprised of three components. One is the hardware solution, second is the connectivity, and third is the service offering. In our particular case, we are very much focused on product and service offering. Specifically, the XL series was very much created to be your media hub within your living room. We were one of the first ones to actually ship out a product, the XL1, with an HDMI connector. Basically, that links to the fact that digital home to us is convergence. Convergence entails the symbiosis between the AV world, or the CE world as it's also known, and the IT world. As you know, more and more, the richness of the web with metadata, with content online, and all the various service offerings is an appealing position to end users that don't want it residing specifically within either a desktop located in a den or a secondary room or a notebook that they take with them. They want to enjoy the richness of that content, that online content, on their large screen TVs. Now, the convergence realm has expanded as well with the adoption of flat screen TVs. With those coming into the living room with HDMI connectors, their adoption being more and more expanded, We have a combination of IT, CE, that adds value to the total value proposition to end users.
And so the philosophy on the XL series, just give us a background on that and how that came about.
Very interesting question also. As you know, we should have the way for the desktop form factor. So, okay, what next realm where end users will want to actually deploy a PC platform, but with a fairly standard offering? And immediately to our, because of our history, we are one of the principal players in the room in any country in the world. Our penetration through our TVs, through our PS2s and PS3s. So we thought, okay, let's add the IT richness within the room. But that implied a fundamental redesign of the chassis. You're not going to put in your living room next to your TV a standard box, a vertical box. So we took what is traditionally the living room AV form factor, which is a 430mm wide form factor. We adapted that to a IT infrastructure inside. We also went through extreme care in tailoring the hardware offerings within the platform to make it very living room friendly. I mentioned earlier on one of the first ones to adopt HDMI in an IT platform. We also kept the noise level to a strict minimum using liquid cooling. We also adopted non-standard connectivity options. We had AV ports at the front, we had component out in the back, HDMI, plus the plethora of IT. So all in all, we redesigned what one would call a desktop from the ground up to make it living room friendly. And that's what we came up with the XL1. Now, the XL1 also came with one additional component that completely changed the value proposition. It had a connected changer to it. And that changer enabled you to pop in 200 CDs or DVDs, and through the connectivity to the PC and ultimately to the web, you could, with a touch, I would say with three clicks of a button on your remote control, get metadata off the web so you could see your whole library in one screen, scroll through that library, and on top of that, you had album cover information, and you had summary of the movies, for instance. So again, it was very much the idea of bringing IT richness to a living room environment by creating a 1+1=3 value equation.
And what was the reaction like then to the XL1?
The XL1 was very much ahead of its time, we would say. Previous to us, HP had some offering in the market, and both HP and ourselves were trying to develop what is known as the convergence market. So it was very much tailored to early adopters, and it was received as such. It is not a mass volume product. It is much more of a tech-savvy product offering.
And would you find the consumers of the product, the XL1, were the sort of the AV integrators, or were they the sort of the media center enthusiasts that were looking at the device?
Yes, they were looking at the device, but I wouldn't say that they were overly adopting it either. There is still a certain wariness and cautiousness from AV integrators when it comes to IT platform integration. I've often heard the story, and I like to quote it. One AV integrator one day asked me, well, if you connect a PC to your TV, will you get a virus on your TV? And will your TV stop functioning as a result of it? It's an anecdotal feedback, but nevertheless, it translates the fact that there is some caution as to adoption of IT platforms. Pop-up screens, viruses, slow boot-up times, all these things are not very welcome in a traditional AV environment. Nevertheless, as time went by, and we are now in nearly 2 years of the adoption of the XL series and in the third emanation of the product, the interest level has grown. Specifically on the XL3, there is enormous interest because it is the one platform out there that we believe is very, very attractive to this type of offering by combining not only what I mentioned earlier, so the IT platform created for a CE environment, but because we adopt Blu-ray read and write, and we have the famous cable card high-definition TV-ready solution in there.
Right, so let's go on to that now. So between you got the XL1, what was the difference then to the XL2 before we talk about the XL3?
So the XL1 was our first trial with it. We had the PC with the changer. XL2 was basically a refresh of the hardware components, beefing up the CPUs, very much traditional IT evolution. What One other change that we did between the XL1 and XL2 is we added an ATSC TV tuner. We heard it loud and clear from everybody that having just an NTSC solution was not enough for a product tailored for a living room environment. But where we really, really shook the value proposition was when we came out with the XL3. Mm-hmm.
And the XL3, so just that's a relatively new model. When was that launched?
It actually was announced at CES. It has started shipping at the beginning of this month, so it is out there, it's available, and I would very much welcome anybody to look at the blogs and to look also at Sony.com, because it is very much available right now.
And so give us a breakdown of some of the features then of the XL3.
Yeah, so XL3, again, designed to reside in the living room in the sense that it's a horizontal form factor. It has a polished look and feel to it with a combination of black and silver. It has a plethora of connectors, both IT and AV, one of them being HDMI. It has also component out. But where the true value proposition of this platform lies is in its high-definition storing. It has, as I mentioned earlier, a Blu-ray read-and-write drive at the front, and it has a cable card slot at the back, enabling you to go beyond what is currently being offered, which is NTSC, ATSC. With the cable card slot, you get not only NTSC, ATSC, and clear QAM, but also now cable card support, including premium channels like ESPN HD and HBO HD, depending, of course, on your subscription.
We mentioned frequently on the show about cable card and, you know, the huge interest with cable card. So it must be really nice to be able to offer that feature, because I know everybody sort of demands that from a high-quality media center, and I'm sure that's, you know, one of the features that you really wanted to get into this.
Absolutely. Ian, I'll be very frank with you. A lot of my competitors, when ATSC came out, positioned it as a high-definition TV solution. Now, I agree. ATSC signals are 720p 1080i in certain cases, and as such can be qualified as HD. You might have noticed that when we had the XL2, we did not message ATSC as a high-definition solution. We just mentioned it as a digital TV solution. Because to me, the expectation is when you mention high-definition, you, as an end user, expect to get the same amount of content that you get from a set-top box, a cable set-top box, as in with a cable card solution. So now, finally, with the adoption of the cable card solution, integrated, by the way, within the chassis, we are able to offer that premium content all within one easy-to-manage UI. And by the way, one of the merits of MCE is that the EPG guide is actually updated much more regularly than a cable card solution, as a traditional set-top box, I should say. So, again, this means that the IT platform has a one-up on the traditional set-top boxes.
I haven't seen cable card running on Media Center at CES. It does look fantastic, and I think it's really great that that Sony are offering cable card on a device like this. And you mentioned we've got a Blu-ray on there as well. What kind of features do you get having a Blu-ray drive on there?
Oh, this is basically strengthening the high-definition story. You are now able to play back that rich high-definition content within one, again, platform. You have the ability to, again, as I mentioned earlier, to view and record HDTV content, but now you also have the ability to take premium content, which is packaged, and enjoy it through that HDMI connector on your HDTV.
Right.
And by the way, I should also mention, I should strengthen the fact that our Blu-ray drive is not just read-only. It also enables you to store in pristine high-definition resolution your personal content.
Okay, so what kind of storage can you get them with a HD Blu-ray drive?
So this is a very important question, and thank you for asking that one, Ian. I am very, very careful in my messaging of the XL3 not to imply that you can record cable card content on the Blu-ray discs. Indeed, there are gating factors, DRM, content protection, that prevent us from transferring that content that has been captured through the cable card to a Blu-ray disc. So, as you heard me earlier, I mentioned personal content. So let's say that you have captured some personal family movies with your HD camcorder. You can use the XL3 to capture, edit, and store on a Blu-ray disc that content, all within a pristine high-definition solution. As you know, in olden days, when you had only DVD drives and recordable DVD drives, even if you had a high-definition camcorder in 1080 resolution, you would have to downgrade to 480 to store it on a DVD. Blu-ray, on the other hand, because it can support 1080, gives you an end-to-end high-definition path for that personal content.
Right, and I suppose, yeah, and as a data drive as well, what kind of storage can you get, can you use if you're using it for sort of backups or for storing just, you know, general data onto the disk?
Yep, you can. Basically, Blu-ray comes in currently in two emanations, either a re-recordable 25 gig or a record once 50 gig. So you are now able to store 50 gigs of data on a single disk that you can back up with.
So you could get a lot of content on there, or a lot of your own, you know, your own personal content on there. But you're right to point out then that if you're recording things on cable card, just due to the way that the DRM and everything else works, you can't just burn them straight onto a Blu-ray disc.
Correct, correct. I'm very, very careful with that. Please help me also in disseminating this message. We would hate for anybody to be confused by this solution.
But then I suppose non-copy protected content, something that comes over, you know, a standard definition or whatever, you can put that on there.
Right. So my understanding of the situation, and I welcome anybody's feedback to the contrary, is that once you put in, let me put it another way. If you do not insert a cable card, you can still use the TV tuner with NTSC, ATSC, and ClearQuant content, and you can most certainly record that onto the Blu-ray discs. But once a cable card comes into play and is inserted into the slot at the back of the unit, I believe even NTSC and ATSC and ClearQuant signals are blocked out.
Right, I'll say, yeah. So it depends on... so once you've got the cable card in there, there's some additional DRM included.
Correct. And the solution that you have, apart from, of course, viewing the content and recording it to the PC's hard drive, if you want to take that content somewhere else, you have to use a Xbox 360 as a DMA to export it to another TV.
Right. That was going to be the next question then. As part of the digital home, is that one of the things that you can do? You can connect up Xbox 360s and extender to the Sony XL series.
Absolutely.
And do you think then is there other types of devices, Sony devices or other devices, that are all part of this sort of digital lifestyle from Sony?
I can't comment too much on other products categories. Let's put it this way. There is a growing realization that AV and IT are merging. And I expect that Sony overall is committed to this category and will come out with increasing solutions to meet this demand from the market.
So you expect sort of more some more devices to come down the line that are all sort of tied in together? Because, I mean, there's things like, you know, digital cameras and things. What's Sony's position with the sort of the digital cameras? Is it going to be easy to integrate those within the Sony XL series?
We have all the connectivity options within our VAIO platforms that enable you to transfer content from those devices to the PC, edit it, and then bring it back to the devices themselves.
And then, of course, like you said earlier, if you're going for the HD, your own HD content, you can use the facility of the Blu-ray to store that.
Absolutely. Yes, very much so. And we very much welcome the ability to bring the value proposition away from standard definition to the new realm of high definition.
So on the XL3, what are some of the sort of specifications that listeners may be able to be interested in? You know, what kind of processors and that kind of thing is going to be offered in it?
So it's very much a high-end platform. It's an E6400 CPU. It has 2 gigs of RAM. It has a very high-end NVIDIA GeForce 5600, I believe, graphics card. You know, ultimately, for this kind of platform, I'm shying away from the traditional PC game where it's all about specs. Very much because we're in the convergence realm, let me assure you that we build the platform with the necessary hardware to handle this high bandwidth content that is HD to ensure a smooth operation to end users. And I would shy away from mentioning specifications and compare it apple to apple versus traditional PCs. This is more about high-definition solutions rather than high-definition performance.
Yeah, so I understand what you mean there. I was certainly on the show in the past, we've had other providers who don't like really calling them PCs either. You know, they're media center servers or something else. But, you know, we've come a long way from a beige PC. Certainly.
Definitely. And you might have noticed that we actually refer to it as the digital living system, living as in a living room, because we just didn't want to brand it this as a traditional PC, because it's so much at the forefront of that convergence realm.
Mm. And you mentioned about connectivity on the XL1. Have you got the same kind of thing with the XL3 then? You've got HDMI, and what other options have you got for connecting sort of AV components to it?
Yeah, so we definitely kept the connectivity options the same. We just beat them up. There are different versions of HDMI coming out with time, so we've of course followed that path. So if I go top down from high definition down to standard definition, we have HDMI and component out. We have coaxial SPDIF, also referred to as Toslink, in and out. Sorry, coaxial is out, SPDIF is in and out. And then we have the plethora of RCA connectors, standard definition AV, audio and video.
One thing, I'll include a link in the show notes for the, some of the for the images of it, but the device looks really nice, and it, like you said earlier on, it really does look like a true sort of AV component. Do you offer like the peripherals for it? So is the keyboard and the sort of the remote controls, are they included?
Very nice. Thank you, Ian, for reminding me. Indeed, the platform didn't come just by itself. Because we very much tailored it to a what we could refer to as a 10-foot environment, i.e. the ability to control the PC while actually sitting in your couch, which is potentially 10 feet away from your TV, we have a remote keyboard, RF-based, that has a built-in touchpad. So all your traditional operations can be done through the PC, your inputs and outputs, even using the mouse. Now, we also have a remote that is very much MCE-friendly, so that whenever you're in that MCE shell, you can operate the basic operations of the PC, which are then much more entertainment-focused, through the remote control. One additional layer that we added to the overall offering for this 10-foot usage scenario, we have a little application called Life Browser. And the Life Browser is the ability to operate an internet page through a remote control. That is a little unique, I hope you will agree with me, because traditionally when you open up an IE page, first of all, if you're looking at a large screen TV and it's 10 feet away from you, the text might be a little bit too small. So you have the ability to actually zoom into the page and make it more clear considering the distance that you're reading it from. Secondly, with this little Live Browser application, you can scroll from hyperlink to hyperlink using the up, down, left, and right keys of the remote rather than using a mouse. Again, the idea here is to facilitate your life to interface with that richness of content that is on the web while doing it in a living room environment, sitting in your couch.
Right, that's a really good idea, because so you've got the XL3 hooked up to your Bravia TV, and you want to browse the web, you've got this sort of way of zooming in and then controlling that the web experience through the remote control through the keyboard without having to sort of do the traditional PC style, you know, sitting down at a desk and operate it.
Absolutely, definitely.
So that's a really good idea. How have you found the reaction to the XL3 from the AV integrators? Do you think this is a product now which they can run with? Now we've got cable car, Vista, and Blu-ray, and everything else on it.
We are very, very surprised by agreeably surprised, by the positive reaction and the amount of interest that this platform is generating. Of course, the overall market environment has changed since we are the only major PC OEM still creating a living room HTPC form factor. But so that apart, the timing of us being able to release a Blu-ray / cable car solution is generating a lot of interest in that channel. And I know that questions have arisen as to how committed we are to this channel and so on. I can only say that contrary to some other product offerings, we are very much committed to the digital home, in the sense that we do not do traditional desktops anymore, so we have no fallback position, and we are hopefully enticing end users and solution providers by creating these high-definition, high-end solutions so that they can actually adopt it and expand the market awareness of the convergence area.
Hmm. I mean, it certainly is a nice device, and I can see the AV, you know, integrators really take into it as it's a complete solution with offering the Blu-ray and the cable card.
Yeah, that very much the combination of those two components is very, very much key. To your valid point earlier on, cable card has been in the news for quite some time, a high level of expectation. While the products are now shipping, they are also shipping in, maybe not huge volumes. However, I expect that the adoption of that solution will increase with time, and we will most certainly be one of the ones leading the expansion of these solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that Sony is probably a very big brand name to the back in the media center platform is really good to know.
Indeed, we have a DNA, I would even pardon the pun, but say an HDNA of being there in the living room, of being very AV focused. Now we're coming in with, as I mentioned, a high definition story, so we're changing our DNA to an HDNA where we offer, we hope, compelling solutions in a high definition realm within your living room.
I remember seeing it at CES some other sort of form factors around some Sony products, and one was like a circular media, I think it was a media center PC. What's that range?
So the XL3 is our flagship model, as you and I have discussed at length. It's very much high definition focused. However, we also came out with a revolutionary new design that you're referring to, which is the TP1. It is a round-shaped, wide PC to be connected to a TV to offer you, again, that conversion story. Let me give you a bit of background as to how the TP1 came about. With the expansion of flat panel TVs, we have realized that there is less and less room within your living room to put in a traditional AV form factor. So for more space-constrained, urban maybe settings, we realized that if you want to add IT intelligence within your living room, you don't necessarily want to have the traditional form factor, neither do you want a high-definition story. You just want a casual platform that enables you to actually access internet content and enrich your AV experience within your living room. So shrinking down the form factor is one thing, but shrinking it basically makes it less visible and less attractive to some end users that we're targeting. Again, we're going after the urban socialites. So we decided to make it round, different from anything else out there. So again, it starts striking you as, oh, what is this platform? You're getting intrigued. You want to check it out. And we also offered the white color to make it stand out, but also to make it more part of your living room in the sense of a decoration. So your IT solution is part of your overall decoration within your living room, but being attractive to the eye so that it creates a differentiation from a design perspective. You see, it's a merging between functionality and look and feel. Now, the TP1 is a traditional PC. It's very small. It's a it has HDMI out, so it's the ability to connect a PC to your Bravia TV through HDMI and getting DVD back if you want to, even CD recording, DVD recording, but ultimately, because it has wireless LAN built in as well as Ethernet, you have the ability to bridge that gap between the internet and your TV in a much more casual and yet fashionable way than the XL3 would do.
I mean, it's a really neat looking device, and I'm just looking at the pictures on the website now, but seeing it in the flesh at CES was even better. Mm-hmm. It does stand out as something different and something that... like you said, really, you know, just you could put down in your living room next to your TV without, you know, getting a lot of grief from your spouse, perhaps, on having a big, you know, PC chugging away in the corner. It doesn't look like that. It does look quite stylish, and I thought it was an interesting way to go, and hopefully, you know, we'll see more of these sort of innovative form factors in the future.
Very much so, Ian. I can guarantee to you, as you might have already seen, there is growing awareness within the PC industry about design. In an industry that is increasingly commoditized, again, I mentioned vertical form factors and notebooks, the commoditization is increasing by the quarter. So one of the differentiating factors is, of course, design. And not only ourselves, but also our competitors are looking at new form factors, new designs, new ways to differentiate one platform versus the other. Fortunately for us, we have a very long history of very good design, revolutionary design in some cases, but most of the time very appealing design. Here with the TP1, we're pushing it one level further, breaking the boundaries of what would be traditionally considered a grey box or even a horizontal form factor by exploring the market and saying, hey, this is your PC, but guess what? It's small, it's cute, it's white, it's part of your living room decoration. And guess what? It actually is functional because it enables you to do all the traditional IT usage that you would do, browse the web, email, but it does it in your living room. So it's an all-encompassing selling package that is pushing the boundaries of design, and we will very, very much continue along the lines of changing the quantum, I would say, of design within a living room.
Mm. I mean, it is a very nice design, and do you think we'll see from Sony sort of more of these different designs coming through?
Yeah, and Ian, actually, if you look at it, you can already have a pretty vague idea of what we have in mind. Let me compare four different products that we have within the digital home category. You've got the XL3, which is high definition, AV-centric. This is for the early adopter. There, the design is more traditional, but it's very polished. It's brushed aluminium. It's shiny black. It's very quiet. Then you go into a lower end end user who wants a more casual usage, but also space-saving one with the TP1. So let's call it the TP1, the little brother of the XL3. There, the design is round, it's white, and it's completely different from what is out there. Another product that we have is the LS series, which is very much inspired from our Bravia TVs. It's an all-in-one desktop. It has a floating glass design in the sense that the screen is actually surrounded by a polycarbonate frame. So you have the impression that the screen is actually floating in midair. And then last but not least, we have what we call the WA1, which is a wireless audio device. It is reminiscent of the design of the TP1 in the sense that it's white and it's oblong, but it's a very different from what is out there. So if you look at this total offering, we're looking at living room or kitchen or completely portable solutions, but all of them very, very different design, and hopefully everybody will agree, stylish designs versus what is currently available on the market.
Yeah, I think they are very stylish, and it's good to see a big name like Sony can innovate on the designs and bring new form factors through.
Thank you for that kind comment.
Sony have also got a fairly wide range of media center laptops. So how do they fit in with sort of the digital home philosophy?
Well, luckily enough, actually, I do handle notebooks as well, so I definitely can address your question. The laptops are currently in various form factors, as you might well imagine. We're going all the way from 17-inch to a ultra-portable 5-inch UX little platform. The MCE adoption is more on the mainstream 15.4 screen size and above. The solutions of connectivity within digital home are still very much residing within the MCE shell itself. We are looking at increasingly incorporating these portable form factors within the digital home, and we have a few tricks up our sleeves that we will be hopefully releasing in the next year or two that will strengthen the combination of those two. So basically your hub residing within your home and your portable end-user scenario, where ultimately what you want to do is have an intrinsical, invisible experience where whatever content is residing on your hub can be taken on your portable device and can sync up automatically. I can't share too much details about our future roadmap on that perspective, but it's a no-brainer to realize that what end-users are looking for is intrinsical, invisible, always-on connectivity between their permanent platforms residing in the home and those that they take on the road with them.
That is definitely one issue that I have. You know, I've got multiple devices. I've got a media center PC, and I have a Vio laptop which is for work, and I've got a UMPC. And you know, keeping all these things synchronized together is definitely one issue that I'm sure a lot of people have.
Because we've actually adopted Blu-ray on some of our platforms, we have it on the 17-inch AR, and recently we announced a 15.4, the world's thinnest and lightest Blu-ray-enabled notebook. If you look at it from a XL3 / notebook perspective, you have the ability to take up to 50 gigs of content, to your earlier point, of data, basically. Burn it on the Blu-ray disc on your media hub, which is the XL3, and then take it on the road with you with the AR and the FZ notebooks. All that in pristine high-definition resolution.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose it does open up some possibilities there.
Yeah, indeed. The problem, of course, is that 50 gigs is a lot of data. I personally actually don't have 50 gigs of data that I want to take on the road with me, but I'm pretty sure some of our advanced end users out there will find some usage for that.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. But it's nice to be able to offer a complete range of solutions, isn't it? Right from, like you said, from the UX, UMPC, via the laptops, all the way up to the XL3 series.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at it, you were mentioning design. If you just look at now beyond the traditional HTPC solutions, home theater PC solutions, and you add in the notebooks, you will definitely see that our designs are extremely different from what is out there on the market. The UX is a very good example, a full-fledged operational PC that can fit in your pocket. Some people have doubts about the pockets, but definitely in American pants, they definitely the UX fits in it. I guarantee that to you. But on the high end, you've got, of course, the AR, very shiny, very polished, with a Blu-ray story in the high-definition panel. So it is a very diversified and yet differentiated value-added proposition that we offer to our end users with a design story behind it.
I mean, they are good quality machines, and that's one thing I like about the Sony products. I mean, I've had a VAIO laptop for quite some time now, and the current one I've got now it's got Vista on it, it's got Media Center on it, and it does make a really good machine. And I think the XL series as well offer a nice sort of high end range that will appeal to the AV installers and the enthusiasts. So you've kind of got a complete range covered.
We do. We have a plethora of products that are very much open to different use scenarios, and we welcome the opportunity for custom installers or private end users, be them high end or mainstream, or even ultra portable, to use them in very different means from what we originally intended. It's always surprising to see that sometimes when you create a product, you market it for a very certain audience, and yet it is picked up by another segment of the population where you didn't necessarily think about them, but you go, oh yeah, that's a very good point. Thank you very much for using our platform in a different user scenario. We welcome the creativity of end users in using our products as much as we create creativity in the design of them. Mm.
And then in terms of sort of availability, the XL3, is that available worldwide or is it a US-only release?
There are different denominations of the XL series, both in Japan and in Europe. I'm not so familiar with the other products in the other countries. I would have to basically defer to my colleagues, but it is a worldwide product.
Right. And things like, obviously, the Sony.com is probably the best place to go and have a look at all this stuff.
Indeed, absolutely. Well, Sony.com, and then you would have to filter out, indeed, the various countries.
Yeah. I mean, there's some nice pictures of the XL3 on there and on the TP1 that we were talking about as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
thank you.
Many thanks for your time today to come on the show to talk about these. It's great to have a company like Sony on the show. It is nice to be able to talk to someone in such a big company, but to be able to talk to someone on a podcast like this. So I think that shows that at least Sony are listening to what the listeners and what people are asking about, and that you want to keep the conversation open. So I'm really pleased with that.
Thank you, Ian, for actually giving us the opportunity to express directly some stuff that is so interesting, I believe, ground-shaking, challenging in some cases. Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to clarify any misconceptions that there are out there, and also hopefully convince people that there are solutions that they've been waiting for that are now readily available for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if anybody's thinking of sort of going to talk to their AV installer about installing a Media Center PC, then the XL3 is definitely worth considering. And I think things like the TP1 are a great way of, if you've unable to convince your spouse about having a PC connected up to your TV, then it's something that's slightly different and may appeal as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your kind words.
Well, great. Well, many, many thanks for your time today, and really enjoyed talking to you on the show.
Thanks, Ian.
Okay, that's it for another show. The email address for the show is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Get forums, have a think about the real world feature, and if you're interested, let me know on that. I'll see you around on the website. Bye.